Begin, we're in the middle of Pasuk Gimel, page 4, the middle of the Malbim. The middle of the Malbim, we're up to the word Ba'a, page 4 of 6. Let's continue with the Malbim. Let's go. We did the whole Malbim. That's really the truth. We did already the whole Malbim. Let's finish it off a little bit. The very, very end, page 407. Let's go to page 407. Let's start from Vayitein Sechara. Okay, Vayitein Sechara. Okay, so we discussed that the ship was Ba'a. Okay, the idea that the question of the Malbim was, why does it say in the past that the ship was Ba'a Tarshisha? It should say more correctly, the ship was Heleches Tarshish. And the answer, he gave a very novel answer, that the ship, it means the ship has just arrived. The ship has Ba'a does not mean that it's preparing to leave. The ship has just arrived. And when the ship arrives, you need turnaround time. You need time to clean the ship, to refuel, to restock, to get ready for the next voyage. And therefore, the ship is not going anywhere anytime soon. Yonah, who was in a rush, an emergency to get out of town, he said to the captain, I will pay whatever it cost for this ship to leave immediately. And that's why we have this whole mention. The ship was Ba'a Tarshisha. It has arrived from Tarshish, and now I want to leave, and therefore he Vayitein Sechar has given the wages. Last night I was dreaming, and I was thinking, why then does it say the word Ba'a? His whole question is based on the point why it says word Ba'a when it should say Heleches Tarshish. So I was thinking the question should have been, why does it say Ba'a Milara? The emphasis on the end, the last syllable. If it would have said Ba'a Tarshish, so wouldn't that mean the same thing? Ba'a means in the past tense. Past tense it came, but I guess that would say that it came to Tarshish. Ba'a means it arrived. All right, forget about that. Scratch that, okay? I'm not going to confuse my nonsense. Okay, let's go further. But let's continue a little bit. Should we just review these last words? Right, I guess in Mitarshish, right? Ba'a, okay, we'll see. Okay, 407. Tarshisha, okay, right. Whenever you have a hit at the end, it's like it has a lamed in the beginning. Okay, let's see page 407. On page 4 in the Malbim, let's just review these words. We stopped in the middle, on page 407, in the left column towards the bottom, where it says the words Vayitein Sechara. Yoina paid for the wages. Vezem Bavar B'Masha Kasa Vayimsa Aniya Ba'a Tarshisha Shahaya Roy Loimar. It should have said Aniya Hoileches Lisarshish. Rak. What is the answer? Shahaniya Ba'a Ata mitarshish. It has arrived from Tarshish. The derech bali hu aniya shlo loshuv take it via ba'am. The derech is you don't immediately leave. If you've arrived, you need some time to relax, to clean the ship, to refuel. Rak yamdu kama yamim. Add until yimtzu michsas ho anashim over yam baderech hazeh shimalu maskoires haniya. Until you find a collection of people who are willing to pay for a voyage back to Tarshish. And what did Yonah do? Yonah said, no, I have an emergency. I have to get out of town. Umiher Yonah l'shalem sechar kol haniya, to pay the cost of the entire journey. V'hoyle b'zeh shtei kavonis. Number one, she'im im shetelech tekef. Number one, the ship should leave immediately. Number two, v'im shelo yimotsu al ho'aniya. It should not be found on the ship Nefoshois Rabois. Achar sheyoda sho'evim bo'aniya yu b'sakona loyrotso sheyoivdu Nefoshois Rabois. So he learns another idea. He's injecting another point, another fascinating insight. Is Yoina Bedafka wanted to leave immediately and not wait because he did not want to endanger the lives of more passengers. Now, when I was a little bit younger, I used to watch a lot of television and other things. And I and just sticks in my mind some type of my favorite types of things were like airplanes, plane hijackings, and all those type of adventures. And it sticks in my mind. I don't know. I really don't. It's weird with you with this the team of hijackers, and they saw some people that were going to be on the plane, and they had rachmanis on them. They did not want to put them in danger. They were planning a very elaborate, sticks in my mind, this show I once saw, a very elaborate hijacking. And they knew anyone that's going to be on the plane, their life will be endangered. So when they were ready to go, they saw a family, some children, and they somehow manipulated the situation that they should not board the plane. They should not. They took one of the kids, and the kids got lost in the airport, and the parents couldn't go on the plane because they're looking for their kid. They did this on purpose because they didn't want.
Tzaddikim.
Oh, tzaddikim. Yeah, tzaddikim. The Baditshava would say. Like I told you, this fellow who is in California. He lives. I don't know. He lives in California where they kill there. It's a very bad neighborhood. People get robbed all the time. And they come and he cleaned out his whole house. He comes home after Yom Tov and there's nothing left in the whole house. The Gaon have cleaned out the whole house, including the refrigerator. He left one bottle, one either can of soda or a bottle of beer. And he said, "Oh, the Banditshava would say, look, the Melamed Schus. The Gaon knew I would come home. I'd have so much Agmas Nefesh. So at least he left me a bottle of beer." So in Melamed Schus, even on the biggest Gaon, if you see, he left over a bottle of beer for me. So,
with his DNA.
What? With his DNA? Not likely, but at least he left over something for me. All right, so that concludes.
This would be like he went on a suicide mission.
Out of a suicide mission, doesn't say, but he said he he's writing a very powerful idea, the Malam, that he knew that what he's doing is very dangerous. When you run away from Hashem, not to fulfill his command, and that's the big question, how are you going to do that? He knew that what he was doing was not 100% correct, and Hashem is not going to be pleased with his behavior, and Hashem may decide to take his life or do something very dramatic, and oil rasha, oil shcheinai. So he had rachmanis, the Baditshava would say, look, he had rachmanis on the people on the ship. So he saw a ship, it just arrived. He knew every moment that they delay, there would be potential for new passengers to aboard who would likewise be put in danger. He did not want to put them in danger. The less the better. What about the other people? I don't know about the other people, but at least these people he did not. And that is what he is mechadish. Okay, let's now take a look at the Mamori Chazal. A lot of Mamori Chazal in this pasuk. Okay, and then we'll go. Let's see. We have a lot of stuff here. Amori Chazal. Okay, so let's start with Pasuk Gimel. Let's start Vayaka Yoina Livrayach. Okay, let's see. Where is it? It's on page 406. 406. The second line on the bottom. Vayakam Yoina Livrayach Tarshisha Milufnei Hashem Vayerid Vayofet. O'al Rabbi Levi Vidorash. Rabbi Levi entered the Beis Medrash and gave the following drasha. Why is it necessary for it to say that he entered the Beis Medrash? I have no idea. There must be some significance in that, but that's what it says. What is drasha? Yoina ben Amitai me osher hoy. That was a discussion we had when we started the Sefer. From which shave did he come from? So he learns, this Maimar Chazal tells us from Shevet Osher. How do we know this? The Chassid, it says, Ash Osher lo yichoyrish es yoshvi akoy. Osher did not drive out the inhabitants of Akoy. V'yes yoshvi tzidoin. Alma, so what do we learn from this pasuk? Alma tzidoin begvul Osher hoy. Okay, now that's not relevant to our pasuk. We see that Osher lived in the gvul of Osher. Tzidoin. Okay, tzidoin is right near Tzor. We always usually go to group together, Tsar Vitzidain. We assume they are up north, okay, Lebanon or above in that territory. Uchsivit says, Kum, it says, Kum lech Tsar Fasa, Asher Litzidain, It says kum lech tzarfasa asher. There's another pasuk there. I think the first Eliyahu Hanavi, if I'm not mistaken, it says there to go to tzarfasa. I'm not sure who it says, but it says that Hashem gave a command to one of the, I guess either the kings or Eliyahu. I didn't look up the pasuk. Go to tzarfasa asher litzidai. So here we're stitching together different psukim to learn something. Number one, we know that Osher, the territory of Osher, includes Sidon, because it says that Osher failed to drive out the Canaanim or the people that lived in his territory, which includes Sidon. And we know what? Al Sidon. That's what it says by Osher.
I think it's by Zvulun, but here
it says, so maybe that was the boundary, but here it says in this pasuk in Malachim, in Shoftim, that Osher failed to drive out the inhabitants of Akkoi and Sidon. The simple understanding is it was his territory, and he was unable to drive out the Canaanim living in Sidon. That's number one. Number two, we do know as a fact from a pasuk in Malachim that the city called Tzarfasa, or region, whatever it is located in Sidon. Because it says there explicitly, Hashem told one of the kings, whoever it was, Kum lech Tzarfasa, go to Tzarfasa, where is Tzarfasa? Excuse me, Asher lit Sidon. It is found in Sidon. Next, now we come to our discussion. V'yoyna ben Tzarfis haya. Yoina was a member of Tzarfis. How do we know Yoina was a member of Tzarfis? Okay, that's a good question. Where does it say over here in the pasuk that he was a member of Tzarfis? He's not telling us. That's interesting. I didn't pay attention to that. The Yoina ben Tzarfis haya. How do we know he was a ben Tzarfis? I guess we're going to limit later on. I guess later on in the psukim we're going to have over here some indication. I'm not exactly sure where Yoina was a member of Tzarfis. Let's assume that to be correct. How we know it remains to be seen. And if indeed this is correct, then we piece together these three pieces of information. The conclusion is Yoina was a citizen of the Shevet of Osher. Okay, next. All Rabbi Yochanan v'Darash, I disagree with you. Yoina ben Amitai Mizvulon Hoya. The pasuk is the pasuk Vayal Hagorol Hashlishi. These are pasukim later on in Yoina. The girl Hashlishi came up. Levnei Zvulon Vayal Agor Hashlishi Levnei Zvulon Vayal Yoshua. When it came to divide the Nachala, to divide Eretz Yisrael, Vayal Hagorol Hashlishi Levnei Zvulon Lebishbuchaisa. Nuxiv that says Misham. Of our Kedma, Mizracha, Gita, Chaser, Ita, Kotzin. It says over there there was a place called Gita Chaser. That we learned before that Yona was from this place called Chaser, Gas Chaser. We had this place called Gita Chaser. Ata Kotzin. Okay. Kedavar Asher, Kedvar Hashem, Elokei Yisrael. Asher Dibir Bian Adu Yoina Ben Amita Hanavi Asher Migas HaChefer. That's what we're referring to. We had this one in Malachim, the Yoina Ben Amitai. The pasuk explicitly tells us that he comes from the city called Gas HaChefer. And in Sefer Yoshua, when the Torah, the Navi describes the Nachala, how it was divided, it says clear as day that Chelek Zvulon, in their territory, was this location called Gas HaChefer. So we have over here a contradiction. We have in different indications as to where, from which Shevet he came from. One approach, the result is he comes from Shevet Osher. Another approach, he comes from Shevet Zvulun. Bishubsa Choyroi Nos Bechoyroisa. That means the next Shabbos. Shubsa is Aramaic on Shabbos. Choy Rosa means the next. The Shabbos Acheres. V'Amar Kumehoin. He made a drasha. Rabbi Levi. Now there, from the context of the pasuk, there it says that the one that was speaking in that discussion there, it was Rabbi Levi. That's what the editor has injected into the text. Okay, Sofa, who the members? Rabbi Levi. The first one who spoke in this Maimer Chazal was Rabbi Levi. He said that Yoina came from Shevet Oshe. And then the Bar Plukta was Rabbi Yoichanan. So the next week, Rabbi Levi said, Yofe Limdanu Rabbi Yoichanan. Basically, I'm not having Charata, but he's also correct. I originally made a statement that Yonah came from Asher, and from my words, it implied that Yonah, that's it. Everything is Asher, his mother and his father. And Rabbi Yoichanan came along and he disagreed. And he said, no, he comes from Shevet Zevulun. Now, a week later, after I've reflected upon the subject matter, I think we can make a compromise. That Yonah came from both Asher and Zevulun. Imoi me Asher. His mother was from Shevet Asher. V'aviv mi Zevulun. How do we know this? Uchsiv, it says, Vayered Yofoi. Why does it say that he went down to Yafai? In our Pasuk Gimel, when Yonah is now about to run away from Hashem, he goes to Yafa. Why? Loit sarcha lichtoiv di elavir akoi. If Yonah really lived in Tzidon, where should he have gone? What is the port city of Tzidon? Akoi. Why then is Yonah going to Yafai? Veir akoi shesmucha lenachlas osher. Rabbi Levi is saying, if I am correct that Yonah comes from Shevet Asher, and Yonah thus lives in Tzidon, and Tzidon, the port city of Tzidon, is Akoi, why then does it say that he went to Yafai? El olav kidamrinan, it then must be Imoy me Asher, v'noilad husham. Originally, he was born in Sidon, and then he went to live with his father's family, which was in Zevulun, and the closest port city to Zevulun was Yafai. V'noilad husham b'ba'achakach b'gvul Zevulun u'shifre shal aviv v'yorod li'Yafai, because Yafai, I guess, was closer to Zevulun. Okay, so this is a Yerushalmi. So what do we take out of this? This is very fundamental. Yonah is a mix. It's a hybrid. He's a mix between these two Shvatim, Zevulon and Osher. And later, and we go to the Sefer, this will be very important, because when we study the nature, we all know very well that each Shevet has a very unique personality. Not like, let's say, you see brothers sometimes of a family, everyone's all the same. All of the brothers, all of the members of the family, all have the same, they think alike. It's hard to tell them apart. It's very rare we have in the family, you have each member, each brother is very, very different. Very, very, very diverse. And we know that the Shiftei Ka'a, each one of the Shvatim was very unique. Extremely unique. And when you have a person that is a product of two Shvatim, it's very interesting. Very interesting. I recently, I know someone recently that his mother comes from the biggest Chassidish Yichus on the planet. His father comes, I don't know, the biggest, but from very heavy Litvish Yichus. And only, what? And only in America can there be such a thing where the big melting pot, where the mother and the father, and it was very natural, because they both look flappish. It's like, it wasn't even a consideration. It was an afterthought. After they got married, they probably realized, I come from Chassidish Yichus, you come from Litvish Yichus. But this is like the spitz, the extreme version of Chassidish Yichus and Litvish Yichus. And they're married, and they have wonderful children. And they're not really confused, but it's interesting. My mother always would tell me from my grandma that only in America, that's what America did. America.
What? A shidduch wouldn't have arranged across.
Not if they were living in Europe. If they were living pre-war, so you're pre-war. Pre-war, the way my mother explained to me, my grandmother, I don't have no clue. People talk about before the war. To me, I don't know. It doesn't mean anything. But people who were closer to that generation, who lived in that generation, and then there were survivors of the Holocaust that came to America, and they saw what was going on in America, they would tell you that, especially when it came to shidduchim, they would say this, ma'isim mechol yoyim, this shidduch, pre-war,
impossible.
It's more impossible than fire and water coexisting. Totally impossible.
It just didn't happen.
You live, it was very diverse. There were different communities in Poland. Right. There were communities in Germany. Communities in all over in Russia, Hungary. They don't mix. It just doesn't happen. It's impossible. And Rachmana Litzlan, after the war changed everything. It shook up Klal Yisrael to such a degree, we find ourselves here in America in the melting pot, and we grew up all together, even though we think we're all very separate, but now it's becoming very separate as well. It's much more separate here than it was years ago, but years ago there was not such a big Jewish population, and the difference between one group and another was not so intense. Everyone needed to come on to another because it just wasn't a mass. It wasn't that each group did not have enough of their own to survive. And that is what the war did. It brought about shidduchim that could never, ever possibly happen before the war. Now, when you read and we have that information and we appreciate that, which it's hard for us to really appreciate that, but if we can appreciate that, and you learn about something like this, it's very significant. Because probably, I think we have a right to assume that the differences between the same way before the war, certain types of groups, it was impossible for them to marry into each other. In the time of the Nevi'im, a member of Shevet, of one Shevet, to marry a member of another Shevet was extremely rare. Not that it didn't happen. We know there's a discussion
first
of the Gemara.
They weren't allowed to
until a certain point in time. In order to make sure the Nachla remained firm. And then once the Nachla was established, it was permitted. But just because it was permitted doesn't mean it was done.
Right.
It was permitted. Now, if we in our own lifetimes could have a little bit of a sense of a certain types of communities that it just doesn't happen. These certain types of things, they don't happen, so you only can imagine how much more so it was true when you're dealing with the Shifteikah, whose personalities and that way of life was completely different. It was much more different. I think we have a right to assume that to be correct, was much more different than the neighboring Shevet. And when you have a person who is a cross between two different Shvatim, that's quite a statement. That's a very unique type of situation. And that's what this Maamar Chazal is teaching us. It's very, very significant. Many of us just gloss over. Big deal. What's the deal? Today you see all different types of shidduchim. Big, big deal. But it is a big deal. It is a big deal. Not for us, it's a big deal, but it was for them. And if Chazal are coming to make this point that Yonah was a product between both of Shevet Osher and Shevet Zevulun, that is very significant. Hopefully, when we go to the Sefer, we'll spend some more time understanding the personalities of Osher and Zevulun and see how their personalities, both of these personalities, are coming out in the story that is presented to us in this Sefer. Okay, just the fact that he's running away, and obviously, you know, he's a disturbed person, Yonah. He's a disturbed person. He's given a mission, he runs away. That itself shows that there's some conflict. There's conflict within his neshama. Why is there so much conflict? Well, he has different elements which do not necessarily agree with one another. You know, it used to be, everyone talks about this idea that it used to be in the Gemara, you rarely, if not at all, find a person that has two names. Having two names is a modern phenomenon. Today, almost every child, three names. What?
Moshe Rabbeinu.
Moshe Da'alam Emna.
Moshe
Da'alam Emna.
Moshe had 10 names. That's the truth. The Gemara says, but they only called them one name at a time. They only called them one at a time. Okay, in the Gemara, there's a discussion. You almost never find a person that has more than one name. And even those that it seems did have more than one name, there's always a machlokes that it really means he had two names. One is a title, this and that.
Right.
It's only in modern times. Why is that so? So the commentators, they tell us is that, we don't appreciate this, but they tell us that when you name a child after, let's say, a grandparent, a great-grandparent, that great-grandparent in Shemayim, this very esoteric, is his guardian angel. It has a hashpa. If a person in the Olam HaEmes is aware that there is a living creature in this world that carries his name, he takes an interest. This is what it says in the books. Okay, no one came back to tell us how it works. Yeah.
It's far the name of after living people.
Okay, fine. That's their minna.
Yeah, but not everybody.
Maybe it means that that person, after he passes to the next world, he continues to be mashbi upon the one that carries his name. Adrab, he knows him better. He knew him in his lifetime, so he has more of a connection to him. Maybe Adrab, it's a preparation that al derech ha'olam. Berech Teva, that the one that the child is named after will leave this world first, and he will be a male Yosha for the one that carries his name. I don't know. No one knows how these things work. But what it does say in the big books is that a person who carries the name of someone who is deceased, the one that is deceased is Mashpia, takes an interest, and has an influence over the living person that carries his name. So what happens when you have a child that you name after two people? I'm going to name after this grandparent and that grandparent. So they say, you know, not every person gets along with someone else. Okay, we all know that in yeshiva, okay, you keep this boy away from that boy. They don't see things the same. They don't get along. Not everyone is a good person, but we all know. So if you have, if you name a person after two grandparents, you're taking a risk, because who says that the two grandparents agree on everything in life? One grandparent has one hashkafa, and the other has a different. And if each one is being mashpia, these are Kabbalistic concepts, but it's not so hard to understand. If each one is being mashpia, is influencing their grandchild, and the signals that they are sending the grandchild conflict with one another, the grandchild is a very confused individual. So they write, it is not a good idea to name a child after two people, because you really don't know if those two people are a good shidduch. You really don't know. No one knows. Only Hashem knows.
Yeah, the grandfather had already two names from his.
Right. So today, this is ridiculous, what I'm telling you. Because today, there's no one that's holding back from naming a child by two names. It's Maisim B'chol Yom. It's probably much, much more common. I don't know what the statistics are, but it's extremely common for a child to have at least two names. Obviously, today, we live in a very watered-down existence. And the signals...
Well, you want to be mislike both...
exactly. We have another way of looking at it. We're not concerned for these issues. But this is something which is very common today. But it did not exist... Go back, I don't know the number, how many years ago, go back 500 years ago, for sure you go back to the time of the Gemara, you don't find anyone in the Gemara that had more than one name, or even before, even more recent, it's a new thing today. Today we're just not sensitive to these matters. Niskatnu hadoyers. Oh, so the Gemara has a discussion. Abba does not necessarily mean Abba, you say Abba Yoisi. So there this discussion, Abba doesn't, that's not his name. Abba was a title. Rabbi Yosef. He had a big position, they called him the Chacham. Chacham Ovadia. You know, the Abba, that's made for a better example. But even the better examples, the people was challenged, that it just didn't exist.
What is the Maharav of Chafetz Chaim?
It's in the Sefer.
Yisrael Meir.
Yisrael Meir, that's right. Yisrael, he lived 100 years ago. Okay, 100 years ago, everybody had two names. Everyone had two names 100 years ago. I was go back, I don't know, go back 1,000 years. I don't know. You have to see when this new phenomenon began. And it's clearly because today we're not living on a spiritual level where we have an appreciation, a sensitivity to these issues. So forget about it. It's not an issue. It's a dead issue. But it used to be people who were living on a higher spiritual level. They had a sensitivity to these things. So when you have a person that comes from two different shvatim, his mother is from one shevet and his father from another shevet, that just magnifies the conflict. It's not just that he's named after two different people. He is a product of two very different ways of life. The way Osher conducted his life was very, very different than the way Zevulun conducted his life. It's not, oh, Klal Yisrael, we're one big happy family. That's a very naive way of looking at Klal Yisrael. The degree of diversity that existed in Klal Yisrael in the time of the Midbar and Eretz Yisrael was probably infinitely greater than the diversity we have today between Chassidim and Mesnagdim. And yet, what is the Pella? The difference is they were able to get along with each other. That's the difference. They were extremely, the differences between them were much more pronounced, but yet they were able to coexist. Unfortunately, we today have a problem. We're not so different, and yet we have a much harder time coming together. That is the problem that we have today. Okay, now this is important. Again, this Chazal cannot be just glossed over. We're learning it over here. We have to remember this. We have to probably come back this many times. This idea that Yonah is a product of Shevet Osher and Shevet Zevulun. This is very significant as to why he was chosen and as to how the entire story played out. They're conflicting things that Yonah did. And you can probably can trace his netiyos. Either, this is the playbook of Shevet Zevulun. And when he does this, it's right out of the playbook from Shevet Osher. So how could one person do things which are very, very different? Well, Yonah is a complex individual. He's a product of both of the Shvatim. Yeah.
Why are certain names, especially among the great Amoraim, not used today? For example,
you
rarely if ever hear somebody named Abaya or
Rabba.
Abaya was not his name.
My father, Abaya. You say that's what Abaya was not. It's not a real name. It means his name was really Rabba.
No, Abaya.
Nachmeni. So he called him, but Nachmeni was Rabba's father. So you don't want to call his friend by his father's name. Called him right. You forgot my father's name. Nachman is a common name. I know two Nachmans right off the bat. I know two Nachmans right off the bat. I'm thinking of them right now.
Gamliel.
Two Nachmans.
Gamliel is the real name. Gamliel.
You don't know. Yeah, last name. The famous, the Gamliel family in Eretz Yisrael. It's a last name. There are a lot of us. A whole big family of Gamliels. But you're at the first name, you never hear of someone by the first name of the Gamaliel. Right.
I think once it's fine.
Yishmael. Do you know any Yishmaels?
Yeah.
Do you know any Yishmaels? I don't know any Yishmaels.
No.
What? Obviously, it's because since the Yishmaelim, they're known by the name Yishmael. So today, we don't call anyone Yishmael. In the time of the Gemara, there was a Kohen Gadol. Rabbi Yishmael, obviously, the Yishmaelim were not players. They were not in the news every day. So then it was, but the son of Avram Avinu, he was no tzaddikal. He did teshuvah, b'seif yamav, he did teshuvah. It's a good question, I don't know. It's a mazel. Hakol toli b'mazel afilus sefer Torah shabahechel. Everything in life is mazel. Even which sefer Torah you take out of the Ur HaKodesh is mazel. So it comes to a name, it's a mazel. There are certain names that go viral, and there are certain names disappear. Nimrod in Eretz Yisrael is one of the most popular names.
That's right.
Nimrod was
after that it was banned.
What, no more?
I spoke to someone years ago named Omri.
Yeah.
But Omri...
is also a Russian.
You know, I asked him... I asked him, the Omri, where is that from? So he said, well, you're a rabbi, you should know. I said, you're talking about that Omri? That's like an American calling his son Benedict Arnold.
Right.
So he said... now that explains to me, he wasn't from at all, explains to me why some names were later banned. What happened was when they made the state, Ben-Gurion wanted people to use biblical names. So the leftists all gave their children Nimrod and other such names.
I'm Raphael.
Yeah. So he said, later they said, no, not those names. But...
okay, listen, the older...
they banned the name Nimrod.
Okay, good, okay, good. I mean, it's not going to get you very far, the name Nimrod today, from circles.
There was a member, a leftist member of the Knesset, Nimrodi.
Right. Nimrodi, all right, okay.
Excuse me, in the Shemitah of Nasi God, you say, Eliasov ben Deuel, something said, Eliasov ben Deuel.
Dal and Reish.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's different. The Chazal discussed this. It's not. Some will tell you that the Dal and the Reish. The difference is a little teeny dot, and how it's the way it's illustrated. But no, I don't know. There are the Ra'ah and the Da'ah.
No, Chaver.
Okay, there are many examples like this. I don't know the answer. There's probably a Chazal that explains to you why sometimes it's spelled with one letter. There are many examples like this. The bird, is it the da'ah or is it called the ra'ah? Is it a dalet or a resh? Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Why is there a big dalet? There are many reasons, but one is make sure you don't say acher. Don't make and it's lo yelcho Elohim.
Acherim,
there's another place where it says with the reish is very big. Also, in order to indicate, there are different reasons why. I do not know. Okay, let's go further. Let's move along to the next Maamar Chazal. The next is Shloisha Nevi'im Hei. We have to go further.
He's coming here at another name in his country, but here he's going to choose maybe going to citizenship a Hebrew name. In Shomayim, which name is recognized?
The name that you're given at the Bris Mila, your Jewish name, is the Ikra name. That's the Ikra name. We all know that. That's our tradition. The name, the Jewish name you're given at the Bris Mila, Yikare Shemoi B'Yisrael. You don't say at the Bris Mila, Yikare Shemoi on his passport. At the Bris Mila, you say Yikare Shemoi B'Yisrael. Klal Yisrael, this will be his name. Passport, birth certificate, death certificate, on the matseva, you can write whatever you want. But be Yisrael, this is the Jewish name. The name that is
Jewish name. What does you do?
Okay, let's go further.
Yeah.
Everyone, some people bedafka, they have a secular name. There's actually a ceremony by the Yekis, by the German Jews. There's a ceremony where they give the child a secular name. You don't hear about it today anymore. But there used to be a ceremony that by the Bris Mila. They gave him the Jewish name, and there's a ceremony where they give him a secular name. I know someone that did this. I actually know a real hardline Yekka, and he did this. I remember he invited my father to go to the ceremony where they gave the child a secular name because their approach, and it's an approach that used to be very popular, is do not mix. Mavdil bein kodesh l'chol. When you go out into the street, it's you're profaning the holy name, your Hebrew name, if you use your Hebrew name in the street. When you deal in the secular world, you use a name of chol. Because if you're going to use your Yiddish name, it's a desecration to use a holy name in a secular setting. What is the counter argument? The counter-argument is that today we are so weak, feeble, we are so vulnerable to the Yetzirah, it's worthy to desecrate your holy name. That's right. Do an Avera Lishma, desecrate your holy name for the advantage to remind you every single moment of your life that you're a Jew. You're a Jew, you're a Ben, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and behave yourself. Don't lower yourself to their level. So it's a trade-off. The trade-off is be holy in a secular environment so that you will not do an Avera. Hopefully, it will remind you to
nowadays,
stay the course.
Nowadays, Hebrew names are more mainstream.
What?
Hebrew names are more mainstream.
Right. Today,
there's certain names that
all the B'nai Torah come out, without exception, will have no hesitation writing on a birth certificate, the Yiddish name. That approach today, the Hebrew name, that approach today is extremely prevalent for two reasons. Number one, like I just said, we're so vulnerable to the Yetzirah, you should, at every moment in your life, remember you're a Jew. And the second reason is, I used to teach as an adjunct in college. I get the roster on the first day. I cannot even read one name. Not even one name. Break my teeth. One name. Every name is Chinese, Russian, a lot of Muslim names. I can break my teeth. Everything is spelled with an X. X-I-O. All of these Chinese names. And they all, the students have to teach me how to pronounce their names. So if I'm going, this is a cross-section of America. If I walk into the average college and I have a roster of 25 names and I can't pronounce even one name, so why should a Jew, an Orthodox Jew, be ashamed that his name should be Yaakov, should be Moshe, should be Yehoshua? If this guy's not ashamed that his name is some 25 letters, I can't even get out one syllable, and not only me, okay, he'll tell me I'm a yeshiva, I'm ignorant. I also sat in college courses for many, many years, and all the professors could not pronounce half the names. Okay, not even, they also go to the roster, they don't know how to get out the names. So if they're not embarrassed, we live in a society, Baruch Hashem, this is a very great blessing. Very good blessing that you can do whatever you want, so why should you be ashamed? Go on this bus, go on the subway, look around you. Look around what's going on over here. What?
Right.
Too far. Why should we be embarrassed? Maybe you go back 50 years ago, it was America was people took pride in being Americans. You have even though the whole country is immigrants, even though that's a fact, but it was a degree of pride. You're an American, you have to speak English, and you have to behave like an American, you have to eat apple pie and celebrate the 4th of July.
Maybe you have to do with fear of discrimination.
Today we're in a new environment.
Today, but in certainly in a previous generation or two ago, you know, jobs, education, all those things, they see a name. And so
a woman told me recently that she got married. This goes back a little. She told me she's not a young woman. This woman, she was work. She got married, and she had a great job, really good job, way way back, and she had a baby. And then she got pregnant with the second baby. She was married to a Ben Torah. And he was then in Koilo. And then not too many went to Koilo those days. And then he actually went for a PhD. And she had a really good job. She was bringing a lot of money. And she had a baby. Okay, maternity leave. And she went back to work. And then she got pregnant with her second child. And they called her in to the office and they fired her. They said, "You're fired. That's it, you're dismissed. Here's your pink slip, goodbye." We cannot have a woman who's going to have a baby, have already a second baby. This is disturbing for the workforce, and you're off this, that. You're fired. You're fired.
My daughter-in-law's brother, his wife is a lawyer that has a very good maternity leave. She just had a sixth kid. I don't know how they can keep her in the firm. Either.
Exactly. Today, if they would do this to a woman today, they would be on the front page of the New York Times.
Right. Yeah, a $10 million lawsuit.
Exactly. And then she says to me, "This was expected. This was only me. This was only me. I had a baby. They were not happy. When I got pregnant with my second baby, they called me and they fired me. And they weren't embarrassed to say, 'We don't want you. We don't want a woman who's pregnant. You just had a baby, now you have another. We don't want you. This is not the workforce. The workforce, we have to have people here 9 times every single day. This is not what we accept.'"
Even to see
Okay, so lechatchila, you don't want to hire someone that you can get away with, even today, to a degree. But the bottom line is, today there are two reasons why the names don't mean anything. It's not an issue again. One is because you have to know who you are. We live in a dangerous world. And number two, if we live in a society, we live in the ultimate melting pot. Go on the train. Look what it looks like. You look around to your right and your left. No one's embarrassed to express publicly who they are and where they come from. So why should we be embarrassed? Why should we be embarrassed? Sit down on the train. Look to your left, your right, in front of you. You have the cross section of the whole world. And they'll write it on their forehead and a tattoo on their forehead to make sure you know. You don't forget. Why should you be embarrassed to write Yankel? Yeah.
He was on a train and he was
the Amish.
The guy comes over to him and he starts shouting, "Aren't you ashamed?"
I'm from the Amish.
So you know what he says to him? I'm Amish.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, that's an old story.
Also in college you say maybe antisemitism is second hand nefesh. It's going to be damaging.
Okay, that's also an issue.
I wanted to remain in this, that in the train.
There's also an issue.
Kippah, you want to hide in his religion because some blacks are wearing.
That's right. You have to be very careful. Listen, yeah. I was walking on Pesach.
Yeah.
No, it was Erev Pesach. It was Shabbos HaGadol. I was walking down Avenue L, and was 17th Street, it was 16th, though it was 6th, like right near Edward Morrow. On Shabbos at 12 o'clock, walking back from shul, there were a lot of from people walking very pleasantly, quietly, with not making any disturbance, their cheretz, and a guy passed, a guy that you wouldn't give a second look at, and as he passed us, he said, "Shoot to kill. Shoot to kill." So, what is that? That's not an anti-Semitic statement? Shoot to kill, obviously. What?
No, it's a normal
statement. That's right. There's a lot of anti-Semitism, even over here in Brooklyn. And you're right, you have to be very careful. So sometimes it's not a good idea to express yourself too much. That's right. It's 100%. We don't belong here in America. We belong in Eretz Yisrael. No ands, if, or buts. So you're right. There has to be a balance. But Bederech Klal, we got into this name. Yonah, we have to go further. Let's go further. No more questions. Yonah. Shloisha Nevi'im Heim, next Maimon Chazal. Shloisha Nevi'im Heim. We had this really before. Echad, this was quoted in the beginning of the Sefer by one of the Mefarshim. Echad Tova Kvoito Av, Veloi Tova Kvoito Ben. V'echad Tova Kvoito Ben, Veloi Tova Kvoito Av, V'echad Tova Kvoito Ben, Veloi Kvoito Av. Now here he explains, what are we referring to? Number one, Eliyahu. Eliyahu Navi was Tovak Kvoto Av, Veloi Tova Kvoto Ben. There was a flaw in Eliyahu Navi. And for this, he suffers. He has to go to every bris milah, Eliyahu Navi. He was a kanoi. And what was being a kanoi? He demanded to give honor to Hashem. He was furious that the Jewish people are not with the program. And they're not. And he made an accusation that was false. They do not perform bris milah. And because he made that statement, Hashem says it's a lie. You've crossed the red line, Eliyahu. You're too critical. What? Fake news.
Why did he say that?
Kanoi, he got worked up. He was angry that the Jewish people.
That's why he made it, because he was angry.
He was angry. Kass. He crossed the red line. His accusations against the Jewish people were too harsh. And Hashem said to him, now the truth is, if you look very carefully, this is a drush I once tried to say, is if you look at the pasuk in Malachim very carefully, he really made three accusations. He said that they offer karbonos, they offer sacrifices to the gods on altars that are not afravodah zara. They don't do bris milah. And the third thing in the pasuk. The third thing in the pasuk, I don't remember. I have to go back. I'm just thinking of memory. Because the reason why I'm saying this is because Eliyahu HaNavi appears in our liturgy in three places very prominently. Number one, Baruch Haba. Eliyahu HaNavi comes to every bris milah. Number two, Elio Hanavi comes to every Seder. The Kois Shel Eli. I told you from my first Shechta, this is Baba Maisa. It doesn't say anywhere that Elio Hanavi comes. Taka doesn't. It doesn't say anywhere in any Chazal. You search and find. Nowhere does it say that Elio Hanavi comes to drink from the Kois Shel Elio. We have a minog that we have a fifth Kois, and we call it the Kois Shel Elio. Because it's a teiku. Tishbi Yitari, it's kushyus v'abayus. We do not know what the halacha is. Is it correct to have a fifth kois, or is it not correct? So we don't know what to do. We have to wait for Eliyahu Navi to come and answer the question. So in the meantime, we put out the kois, and we let it sit there. So from that, Rav Herschel Schechter says, it developed a bub, he calls it a baba maisa. That's the word he uses. Not my word. A baba maisa, where since we have the fifth kois, which is a suffix in halacha, and we're waiting for Eliyahu to be poishet to answer the question. So we elaborate, and we say that just like Eliyahu Hanavi comes to every bris milah, Baruch Haba, Eliyahu Hanavi comes to every single seder. Yeah?
I told you, Rabbi Sander, and I quoted to you, Rabbi.
He has a source?
Has a complete different view. He's a predecessor to Mashiach. And I saw in a third ago, he gives even a stronger rabbi.
I didn't show you 100 agadas that say the same. It's beautiful drush. It's listen, I'm with you. Listen, I'm with you. Hanach, if you take it every Haggadah, take out the average Haggadah, there are probably thousands of Haggadahs been printed since the printing press. If you take out there, you're right. Listen. If you go from the time of the printing press, there must have been printed thousands, maybe tens of thousands of Haggadahs. In the vast majority of all of the Haggadahs, they will mention somewhere that Elio Hanavi comes to every single Seder. Okay, that's a fact. Hanach lohem li Yisrael. Im einam neviim, b'nei neviim. You have to go with that. You're right. You are right. You are right. If Gantz Klal Yisrael says this, and we have drush, we have built pyramids, we have built skyscrapers upon this emuna, we have a principle, Hanach lohem li Yisrael. In einam neviim b'nei neviim. All of Herschel Schechter is, he's an ish halacha, like his Rebbe. Ish halacha. If he says it's very nice and it's tradition, but unfortunately, you're not going to find any source b'chol haTorah kula that this is true. Im kabbalahi nekabel. If this is the tradition, so be it. But it appears, he says, not to be a skyscraper that's built on something which there is no foundation. If it's a tradition, in Yadus, tradition is everything. It's everything. But it's kedai to appreciate pshat versus tradition. What's pshat? Why is it called Koshel Elio? The Gemara has a dilemma. Should we have 4 cups of wine or should we have 5 cups of wine? What are the two sources for the 4 koisos? Yotzei si v'yitzalti v'go'alti v'lokachti. But you know there's another word in the pasuk. Vevesi. How many times does it say, what's the second reason why we have 4 cups of wine? Because it says the word kois in the dream of the Tsar. Of the Sar Hamashkin. How many times does it say the word kois in the story? 5 times. Not 4 times. 3 times as the dream, as the Sar Hamashkin related to Yosef. 1 time it says the word kois in Yosef's interpretation of the dream. And 1 time when the dream was actually fulfilled. The next pasuk as Vayihi, it was Paro's birthday, and Paro restored the Sar Hamashkim, and he put the Kois al Kaf Paro. So the truth is, the two Ikarim, the two reasons why we have 4 cups of wine is the 4 Lashonos and the cups of wine. Now the truth is, Rashi really says, you should know Rashi, so we discussed before Pesach, Rashi says, how many times does it say the word Kois? 3 times. And why do we have four cups of wine? The fourth cup of wine is Birchas HaMazon. It has nothing to do with the Haggadah. Nothing. Nothing to do with the Haggadah. Every time you go and you have a Suda, you have to have, according to Shulchan Aruch, if you bench privately, you have lunch today, you go downstairs to lunch today, and they serve bread and you wash, according to the Shulchan Aruch, you're obligated to bench privately on a Koshel Bracha. No one does this. Unheard of. Why not? I don't know. We don't. For some reason, we don't do this. What about three people together? You should. During the weekday, no one does it. During the week, I've never seen during the week someone bench three people on a Koshel Bracha. Shabbos, yesh v'yesh. Most don't. But if you go to a home of a Talmud Chacham, they will bench on a Koshel Bracha when you have three people. Very common. Okay. Why? I don't know. But really, me ikar hadin, every time you wash for bread and you bench alone, you require to have. So the fourth cup of wine is not because Rashi, is not because of the koisites of the Sar HaMashkin, it's because of Birchas HaMazon. Okay, I'll give you a whole drush on that before Pesach. But the Olam doesn't like to say, they don't like that. I don't know why. No one likes to say that. That became very unpopular, what Rashi says in the Gemara and every Pesachim. The Olam says, it says in the Pasuk four times the word kais. Really? It says five times. So what do you say four? Well, three times. Three times, the Basar HaMashkin. And one time, Yosef's interpretation. But you really should know, it says it five times. The fifth time is when the dream was fulfilled. And then in the very next pasuk. So the Gemara has a dilemma. Shall we have four cups of wine or five cups of wine? And the Gemara is an Iboye Deloy Ifshita. Therefore, what do? We fill it up. And every classic question that has not been resolved, we are waiting for Eliyahu HaNavi to give us the correct answer. So therefore, that is why it is called this the Pshat. Rabbi Herschel Schachter is telling us, don't confuse Drush with Pshat. Therefore, we have a fifth kois. We call it the kois shel Eliyahu. We fill it up. We don't drink it because it's a Niboidilo Ifshita. And we call it the kois shel Eliyahu. Eliyahu will one day come and answer this question. Now, that's the launching pad for all of the darshanim to go out into outer space and give you thousands of beautiful homiletic insights into this idea. And he claims, Rav Herschel Schachter, he doesn't say as a fact, but somehow we've gone a little too far, and just like by a bris, baruch haba, and we opened the door, we just got lucky, you know, we opened the door for Shvei Chamoscha, it's like, you know, the perfect storm. The perfect storm. We fill up the Koshel Eliyahu, and we open the door. You can't get better than that, right? It's the perfect storm. It must be. Eliyahu Novi Anovi is coming. Ad kidei kach a minog, to say when you open the door, baruch haba. I saw this in many Haggadahs. There's a minog to say, baruch haba. When he opened up the door.
So he's saying that Shachter is saying that Eliyahu Navi does not come at all?
He's saying it's a very nice thing, it's tradition. Hanach lohem li Yisrael im einam nevi b'nei neviim. But if you want to go find the source for this, it's a Baba Maisa. There's absolutely no Mekar anywhere in writing from any authoritative source that Eliyahu HaNavi comes to everyone's Seder and he sips from the Kais, and that's why there are bubbles on the Kais Shel Eliyahu. Okay, going back. Everyone's house.
About the source for Bris Milah.
Oh, yeah. So that's actually side. That's a medrash. That's on that pasuk. On the pasuk in Sefer Melachim, Eliyahu Navi, that's exactly what it says over here in this pasuk.
Clearly, Eliyahu
Malach HaBris. No, that's a chazal. It's a mamish and maimah chazal. And it's chazal, this goes back to the medrash, way before the Gemara. It goes all the way back. This is a maimah chazal going back to the time of the Nevi'im. I mean, the medrashim come from mamish, from the time of the Bayis Sheni. And there, Eliyahu HaNavi, he criticized Klal Yisrael, and he said, they don't perform Bris Milah. Hashem said to Eliyahu HaNavi, you've crossed the red line. I made you a Navi. I give you permission to be a Kanoi and to be, demand my honor, but you don't have a right to lie. You don't have a right to lie. That far you don't have. Some people, now you're not going to like this, but some people who know the Satma Shita, okay, of Eretz Yisrael, okay, there are a lot of the Satma Shita, the Satma Rav, he bases his whole approach based on Maamar Chazal, fine. You know, you can't argue. But there are people out there who take what he says and they go to new extremes. They manipulate what he says and outright lies. Outright lies, things he never said, make up things that are not true. You have sources for your approach to dealing with the Medina. Gesunde hate. Everything is halacha, 100%. But people, late newcomers who have come along and have invented outright lies, that is something which is you've crossed the red line. You really, and also to go.
If I remember Malachim, it was twice. Hashem approached him and he made a comment. Hashem went to him a second time and he repeated the comment.
Right, so this is the Medrash we're learning today. We're running out of time. Let's finish up very quickly. This is the Medrash. We have three people. Number one is Eliyahu HaNavi. He crossed the red line. He was Toveya, the Kovoid of the Rebbe, of the Father, but not the son. He cared about Hashem too much, more than he cared about Klal Yisrael. And he crossed the red line and he said about Klal Yisrael lies. They don't do Bris Milah. The Medrash says, I'm punishing you, Eliyahu HaNavi. You're going to go to every single Bris Milah to see with your own eyes they do Bris Milah. Like all the Rosh Hashivas. Every single night they have to go to weddings. We're a chamonis on them. Every single night to run from wedding to wedding to wedding, oh, you give out. It's a mamasha.
What's their punishment for?
What? I don't know. We have to find a. What do they need this for? What do they need this? They really need this every single night to go to a few weddings. Not one wedding. They go to a few weddings.
Within a half hour.
It's impossible. It's mamish impossible. It's a very big problem.
What?
Oh, well, let's see. So Shloisha Nevi'im Heim. Echad, they should make a takana that all Rashivas, you become a Rashiva, you don't have to ever go to a wedding. And that way they can do what we want them to do, to learn, and to take care of Klal Yisrael. What benefit is there going to a wedding?
This is the one time in his life. Yeah, you know, each one.
I tell you, I was so disturbed. I went to a wedding not that long ago, and there was someone in the family that did for the family you can't even imagine. The whole wedding was only because of this person. The whole wedding, and he was really supposed to get a bracha under the chuppah. He was supposed to get a bracha. And they told him, we can't give you a bracha because we have too many Rosh Hashivas here, and we have to give. We're giving one of them your bracha. And I saw who the big Rosh Hashivas they're giving to. There were some young people, some young Rosh Hashivas there. I think to myself, okay, you know, there's a Talmud Chacham, there's a Rosh Hashiva. Come on. The day after the wedding, the Chassan will never look, he's now going to Eretz Yisrael, he will never look at this guy for the rest of his life. This relative, who the only reason why there's a wedding is because of this, it's clear as day. He took care of the family. Come on! I mean, the priorities, what are the priorities?
That was a family decision.
Okay, you're right, none of my business. It's none of my business. You're right, obviously there are things I do not know. Okay, obviously, who am I to open my mouth? You're right. You're right. But like, you know, it became such a thing. What is a Rosh Hashiva supposed to do? Rosh Hashiva is supposed to learn Torah. It's supposed to learn Torah. There was one story that I read about Meir Zlatter. It's been a very big Rosh Hashanah in the book, in that book. This is a very, very powerful story to me. Is they were making a book about one of the Gedolei Yisrael, and they have to put a cover. Today, you cannot sell a book. Anyone who says, he said this himself,
Anyone who says, don't judge a book by its cover, never try to sell a book. The one who made up that statement was not in the business of selling books. If you were in the business of selling books, guess what? You judge a book by its cover. Okay? That's the way it goes. So they were publishing a book, and you know they have to put a beautiful picture of the gadol on the cover of the book to sell the book, a beautiful picture. So they told the artist, "Nu, give us some samples." So they created some samples. One sample, different samples, and the samples. One of them was holding the lulav and esrog. Another one of them was talking to a talmid, and Meir Zlatowicz said, "None of the above. Reject them all. The tzura of a gadol, the Yisrael, is him sitting in front of a sefer. That's what you put on the cover. I don't want a picture of the gadol talking to a child, a picture of the gadol holding a little vinesrug, a gadol by the koisel, davening. You know what a gadol is? A gadol is someone sitting in front of a gemara. That's what a gadol is. Everything else is also, that's what the, but this is where does it come from? Where does a gadol derive his power? The power invested in, by the goyim, they say, by the power invested in me, I pronounce you husband and wife. Where does the gadol derive his power from? The Torah. So on the cover, I want a picture of the gadol sitting in front of a gemara, period. Case closed. You know, that really shook me up. What?
Was speaking, saving Rav Eliyashiv. His son saw that somebody threw out a beautiful portrait of Rav Eliyashiv sitting by a sefer.
Yeah.
And it was in a dumpster. He went into the dumpster to take out the picture, and it was not damaged. And that was
a okay, right. But this is this is the tzur of a gadol. To run around to weddings every night? What kind of service are we doing ourselves by having our gedolim run around the whole day to weddings?
Some schools, they have an assistant rabbi just to do that job.
Right. Okay.
Run around to all the symphony.
All right. We're out of time.
What are they?
Are out of time. So let's. It's very late. We'll have to stop here. We'll pick it up again.